The thing that I'm going to argue at the end of the night is that Bill Murray could have saved a child or the mayor at the end of the movie, and he saved both. But if he was only able to save one, which one should he have saved?
Pick a side, stupid. Welcome to Pick a Side, Stupid, a comedy debate show that covers the important issues. Now, here's your host, Sean Carter.
So, hey, everyone. This week, we're here with Caitlin Durande talking about Groundhog Day.
Hey.
The 1993 blockbuster film by... Well, Bill Murray was the actor. Who was...
Harold Ramis, director.
Director, yeah.
And co-writer, along with Danny Rubin.
Okay.
This is just... I'm not looking at IMDb or anything.
No.
This is the knowledge I have at the top of my head. You're welcome, everybody.
Right off the top of the head. So... So are you a big fan of this movie?
I'm a huge fan of this movie.
When did you watch this as a kid? Did you watch this as an adult?
Let me tell you my history of Groundhog Day. Okay, so yes, I saw it a ton as a kid. And one of the reasons is that I grew up in a town very, very close to Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Which, like, I don't know how impressive that is. I guess not really, especially when you look at
I'm very impressed right now.
So I grew up in rural western Pennsylvania in a town called Brookville. Brookville is in Jefferson County. Also in Jefferson County is Punxsutawney.
Okay.
We call it Punxy for short.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that's like some local...
Punxy, yeah, is the nickname for Punxsutawney. So I grew up with this movie and with Groundhog Day in general, the holiday, being a huge part of my childhood because my mom is from Punxsutawney. And my grandma still lives in a town not too far on, like, the outskirts.
Oh, wow. Okay. So this is, like, special meaning to you.
Yeah.
This isn't just some silly film.
Right.
So did they, so, like, when this came out, were people that lived in that area, like, oh, finally, a movie for us?
Maybe. I was probably too young to really understand, like, the cultural impact that the movie had at that time. Because it came out in 93.
Sure.
I was... 7.
Okay.
What I think is true for at least my family and like my grandma and stuff like that, a lot of the movie is Bill Murray's character making fun of like small town culture,
sure,
making fun of the people who live there. And I don't know if they really recognized that.
Okay.
Or if they were just like, oh, cool, that the town that I live in, there's a movie set there. Like, I don't know if they, like, really understood that the movie doesn't necessarily come down on the side of Punxsutawney.
I mean, I think by the end of it, maybe it does. Because in the end,
he's like, I want to live here.
Yeah, let's move here.
Right.
But yeah, sure, in the beginning, he's just like...
Pfft. He's like, these people are hicks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Is it hicks? Is it like, what's the...
Oh, yeah.
Is it really?
Uh-huh.
Oh, wow.
So, rural western Pennsylvania is also commonly known as Pennsyltucky.
Okay.
Like, Kentucky plus Pennsylvania. Sure, yeah. So, yeah, I grew up in an area that was, like, very small town, very conservative. Everyone had... like a four-wheeler. Everyone had red pickup truck. There was a lot of Confederate flags. Like, we got days off of school for the first day of buck season, the first day of doe season.
What?
The first day of... maybe that was it as far as days we got off school.
So you had days off for the opening of...
of these different hunting seasons.
So yeah, okay. So, there was...
so it's like legit...
there's hicks out there. Yeah, for sure. So then, tell me this. Why is Groundhog Day one of the smartest movies that's been created?
Okay, so in a sense, it's a very tightly written script in that every story beat serves a purpose, and every story beat progresses the story forward. There's a lot of functionality. The script was written very economically. Every character serves a purpose. Because I think I've heard that, like, he lives February 2nd for, I've heard 1,000 days, I've heard 10,000 days, like there's different...
So this is something that I wanted to ask you.
Okay.
So what do you think, how long do you think that Bill Murray or Phil Connors is stuck in Groundhog Day for? Because I think there's no way that it's 1,000 days. It's got to be longer, right?
I think it has to be longer because it's long enough for him to master the piano and ice sculpting.
Ice sculpting.
Like, and really become like...
Very good at
it. Extremely good at those things.
He's speaking French.
Right.
You know, I feel like it's going to be a lot more than 1,000 days, right?
Yeah, I think it has to be because 1,000 days is roughly 3 years, right? Yeah. A little, maybe less. I would, yeah, I feel like it has to be closer to 5 to 7 years worth of days. We actually did an episode of this movie on my podcast.
Oh, did you cover it on the, Bechdel?
The Bechdel cast.
I was just not sure how to pronounce.
No Bechdel. One is, yeah.
But yeah, it was just a great podcast. I listened to the one that you guys did on the holiday.
Oh, uh-huh.
Which I watched recently and I did not enjoy as much as I thought I had originally.
It's not a good movie.
No, it's really not. but so you guys covered this on.
We did. And so having watched it through that lens, I will say that I have to like step back from my stance that this movie is perfect because when you look at it through the lens of how it treats its female characters and how it represents women, it, as most movies do, especially movies of this era, doesn't do that great of a job.
Right.
Andie MacDowell's character, Rita, is better developed than a lot of female characters we've seen, especially of like the mid-90s, in that she's smart, she's good at her job, we know what her job is, she isn't represented in such a way where her character's hyper-sexualized. It's not as though we're like, you know, we're seeing all of her skin everywhere, and she's like basically exists to be this like objectified sex kitten kind of thing. In that sense, I think she's a good character. But then there's a few scenes, and I don't even think we talked about this on the episode of my podcast, but I did also rewatch this movie yesterday. And there's a scene where he is actively manipulating her in an attempt to seduce her. And he's gotten her up to his room in his bed and breakfast.
This is right before he starts killing himself over and over again.
Right.
When he realizes no matter how much he manipulates her,
it's not going to work. Right.
Yeah.
So there's a scene where he's like pretty aggressively trying to, he's like kissing her.
Yeah.
And she's like, I gotta go. Yeah. And so basically both her verbal and her like physical body language is saying, no, I don't want to do this.
Right.
Maybe next time kind of thing. He does keep pursuing it, which is like upsetting because the first time she's like, no, thanks. He should just be like, okay, I respect that. But he keeps kind of like pushing through it. And then that scene kind of ends where she calls him out. She's like, wait, are you like calling my friends and asking me, them like the things I like? So at least that scene doesn't end in a way where he like scores with her or whatever and like, you know, gets her. Cause that I think would send a very, harmful, damaging message. But
I think you're right. She is like written better than a lot of women are in movies and that, you know, it ends with her slapping him in the face, really.
Yeah.
That's what it takes for him to go like, oh, I guess the answer is no, even though I've been told no 5 times now.
Exactly.
But also that she was like, are you a stalker, basically?
Right.
You know, she's like sees through him.
Totally.
One of my favorite scenes in that movie is actually when they have, like, first they have a very organic moment with the snowball fight with the kids where they fall and they're very close to each other. And it's, like, this romantic moment.
Uh-huh.
And the next one where he tries to recreate it is, like, one of my favorite scenes in that movie because it's just so painful. He's trying so hard.
Yes. So one of the good things about this movie is that his attempts at, like, romantic manipulation, I guess we could call it, do not work.
Right, yeah.
Because a lot of movies would have that working, and
a lot. 95% of movies,
so many,
probably.
Right.
that's how it ends up.
Right? Yeah, exactly. So at least she, although in the end of this movie, because earlier in the scenes that we're talking about, he says something like, "I love you," really early on. And yeah. And she's just like, "What are you talking about? You don't even know me."
Yeah.
But then by the end of the movie, when he's like, "Oh, we've had the perfect day together. Let's move here together." She's like, "Yep.
Yeah.
Checks out for me." And it's like, wait, what? Like, I feel like they should have scaled way back on the end of this movie where him suggesting they like live to, I get what they're going for, but from her point of view, she's still only known him for about 24 hours.
Right.
So like for her to be like, yeah, okay, I can see moving here with you, Phil Connors, who I met yesterday. Like that is just really bizarre. And I feel like that was almost maybe like a studio note where like they had written the script.
How can we wrap this up?
Yeah. But they're like, make it just like really campy and audiences will love it. Cause it's all like lovey dovey. And then like,
what would have been, so at the end of the movie, instead of them walking out of the bed and breakfast and him saying, "Let's move here," and her agreeing, what would have been the best dialogue leaving that the bed and breakfast to make it clear that like they intend to have a relationship together?
I feel like anything that isn't as severe as "Let's move in together," like even if like, I think the end of the movie is him something like, "It happened. It's February 3rd. It's tomorrow." And she's like, "Of course it is. No big deal." And, yeah. And you know, looking at it from his point of view, yeah, it's a huge deal because he's been living February 2nd over and over again for years, we can presume. So anything just like, if he was just like, "Hey, want to go get a cup of coffee? Let's go get breakfast together." I mean, sure. We can glean from that as an audience. Yeah, they're going to be spending more time together. She seems into it now. Like, he's finally gotten what he's wanted in terms of not having to relive the same day over and over. Like, it could have been so much less severe than, "Hey, let's move here together."
Yeah.
So I kind of want to see this movie retold from like her point of view. Almost
that would be interesting,
because again, we're following Phil Connors, so yes, we're like, yeah, he's living the same day over and over again and he's getting to know her more and more, but we also have to consider her and the fact that she's only every day only knows him for, you know, a day or two.
This will be a short movie, though, because for her, it's just one day.
Basically.
So, well, I guess you'd have to cover much more of that day. And then you'd have to pick which one of them to cover. Or it's like she never remembers any of it that happens.
Right.
I guess. It's, it's strange. I just wonder with that movie, like, what about everybody else's consciousness? Like, over, you know, what happens? Does he, like, stay in that day, but there's, like, a whole universe that moves forward without him, and he's just, like, and then there's another timeline behind it?
Right. I don't know the rules of this world. Or
is it just the whole world pauses? There's only one, right, of everybody? And
yeah, because it has to be, because he has all the memories and all, like, the muscle memory and everything like that from every day preceding
that. Right.
So, because he's able to, you know, again, learn piano.
Right. So he needs the muscle memory too, not just.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he, I don't know what it is.
Would he get jacked if he was working out?
No. Because, I think we're like uncovering something here. Because he can kill himself.
Right.
But the next day he's still there.
Yeah.
But if something physical happens to him based on that rule, it wouldn't carry over to the next day. But he would need the muscle memory to know how to do piano, to know how to do ice sculpting.
Right.
So I feel like there's a little bit of an inconsistency there.
Yeah, you've caught one.
Uh-oh. Nice.
What else? Here's something that I don't know if it's interesting or not, but in Groundhog Day, right, there's only one scene where we see the rest of the world moving on without him, right? And it's where he drives off the cliff with the groundhog. And then they have to
identify his body. Oh, yeah.
And that's the only time that they ever show he's dead.
Yeah.
And so the only person in the world, apparently, that matters is now gone. And they don't just skip to 6 a.m. the next day. The rest of the day has to play out without him, which is odd, right?
Which is another reason I want to see that movie, like this movie told from like Rita's point of view. And maybe it's not a movie.
What does Rita do for the rest
maybe,
of the day?
Right. She has to like call his family. Like,
yeah.
Right. So
his sister that Ned had dated when they were in high school together before he asked her not to,
Right. I think it would be maybe like a series of short films or maybe just, yeah, just like one short after another where we see the story from her point of view and just like all the different ways in which
Netflix series of just Rita.
Let's do it.
A full season of Rita. You gotta get Bill Murray to sign on for it though.
Here's what's so funny, Annie McDowell looks almost the exact same as she does.
Oh my god.
And then she Bill Murray looks considerably older.
Yeah.
But I feel like they can make it work. There's movie magic. They'll do it.
Bill Murray is probably, he's like a pretty old guy now though, right?
I think he's in his 70s? Yeah. 60s, 70s, yeah.
I mean, Annie McDowell's not like young, but she still looks pretty young.
I mean, she, made a deal with the devil and or L'Oreal. I mean, she's got access to so much like, you know, skincare treatments and everything that, yeah, she's going to look young forever. But, I really want to see things unfolding, like in probably not every single day if it's like, you know, thousands of days, right. But, like the key days, maybe the days that we see, Phil Connors living out in the movie, let's see her version of those days and like his weird attempts at like, seducing and or manipulating her. Like, yeah. I don't know. I feel like that's worth examining.
Or even like the days where like he just shows up at work and does a weird thing for the Groundhog Day thing and then just leaves. And then what she has to deal with, like her talking to the cameraman and being like, what are we going to do with this footage? Like,
exactly.
Where he just walks in and he's like, you're all frauds. You know?
Yeah. I think on the third day he comes and he's just like, I don't need to do this. I've already done it twice.
Yeah.
So you take care of that and meet me in the diner. So then I guess she has to get in front of the camera and do the whole newscast. Like he like leaves her in a lurch a lot of the time. Yeah. I feel like
it's a terrific movie, but doesn't meet the Bechdel test. Right. What is the test? It's if women have, a certain amount of time where they're not talking about a man that they're romantic interest or something like that, right?
There are different sort of variations of the test. The one that we subscribe to on the Bechdel cast, that's the name of my podcast, is a movie will pass the Bechdel test if there are two female characters.
Mm-hmm.
They have to be named, so it's not just like a random like server in a restaurant who we only see in one scene.
Sure.
Who we don't know her name. So two characters who are important enough to the story that we know their names, they have to speak to each other. And on our version, on like the Bechdel cast, we require that it's only a two-line exchange. So one female character says like, hey Carol, are you gonna eat the rest of that sandwich? And someone responds and says, no, Samantha, this turkey sandwich is all yours. That would pass. Because they didn't talk about a man. So that's the last caveat. So
so listen to the Bechdel cast and vote for them on... What's the thing that you posted online?
Oh, it's Hoo Ha Ha, which is Elizabeth Banks, like... platform, website, production company,
sure.
That celebrates and promotes like women in comedy, basically. Mm-hmm. So they're doing awards. I don't know when the like deadline ends to
nominate. Sure, but this will come out like Monday.
So assuming those nominations are still open, there's basically just a category for favorite comedy podcast.
And you have to go say the Bechdel cast.
Yes.
And their Twitter handle is... at Bechdel cast.
Mm-hmm.
So you can enter that. I already did it. It's only four things. You don't have to sign up. There's no email or anything like that. So just go there and do it.
It's so easy.
It's so easy. Well, thank you for being my guest this week.
Thanks, Sean. It's been so much fun.
It's been a pleasure, and I don't know how I'm going to cut this down to 20 minutes. We might end up having to do two Groundhog Day debates in the future so that I can use more of this. But thank you so much.
Thank you.
Good morning, and put on your booties because it's cold out there today. All right, we are debating Groundhog Day today and every day. This is a great movie, and we're going to argue it. Okay, so I will tell you, the thing that I'm going to argue at the end of the night is that Bill Murray could have saved a child or the mayor at the end of the movie, and he saved both. But if he was only able to save one, which one should he have saved? So two comedians will come up to the stage, and I will ask a question. When when you decide which side you're going to be on, you have 1 minute to make your case. Then you hand the microphone to the other person. They have 1 minute to make their case. And then each person gets 30 seconds after that. I'm the judge. I'm the only judge in this debate. When I'm right, I want you guys to cheer for me. Go ahead. Give that a shot right now. Yeah. And when you think I got the decision wrong, I want you to boo me. Give that a shot.
You gross.
All right. So our first matchup of the first round will be between Ben Quick and Kevin M. Quigley. Okay. Ben, do you want to go first or second? Okay, your question is another one from Chris Gagne. Chris asks, what's a sadder realization when Bill Murray realizes that he can't save the homeless man's life or that Punxsutawney's economy relies on the exploitation of a groundhog?
Ladies and gentlemen, sometimes, no matter what you do, you just can't make a difference in that world. And you know what? That homeless guy, probably better off. I think it's truly sick in this country when we are exploiting capitalism to the point where an entire city's economy can depend on a simple groundhog and some sort of mystic arts. And have you ever seen those people? They're dressed like weird Jack the Ripper clan wizards, and they're like, "We're up!" They got these top hats, like, "We believe in magic. We can control the weather." And you know what? I hand my microphone to my Republican opponent here. Who is now going to describe why capitalism is important and why that's a great, you know, survival of the fittest tactic.
Hey, painted me in a corner I'm not sure I can contend with. Listen, it's obviously more sad that he couldn't save the homeless guy, because I'm pretty sure here in America, even in real life, we still don't have a problem with the exploitation of animals, or else SeaWorld wouldn't still be around. We still have zoos everywhere. Every single city still has a zoo. A zoo is a place that we cage animals to make them live, where they have homes, but yet we still have a million homeless people. You realize we have excess housing for animals, but a minimal amount of housing for the human beings in our lives? That seems more fucked up to me. Not only can't we save homeless people, we can't even give them homes, even though we've got an entire zoo that we could set free tomorrow and put the rest of the homeless people there. And... for what it's that worth, a zoo full of insane, crazy homeless people, probably way more entertaining to visit. All right.
You know, in fairness, we are not exploiting the same groundhog. He's died like 30 times in the past 100 years, and we just kind of replace him without knowing. And that is the ultimate media facade. Just keeping this country alive. Keeping that city's economy alive by pretending that that damn groundhog hasn't died. We're in denial. It's like an entire city of bad parents who had a pet that ran away to summer camp. You know what I was saying.
Time!
So by exploiting the groundhog, we basically have the groundhog walk, and we all look at it once a year and go, "Ah, let's see what it's going to do." And then once we're done looking at it, basically, it's an entirely visual, superficial, shallow fame that groundhog has. We're, if anything, treating it human. I mean, the only thing we'd use Kim Kardashian for is we saw a sex tape once and she won't go away. That's it. That's the same. We're treating that groundhog more human than we're exploiting it. We should stop exploiting human beings and save the homeless by putting them in zoos.
All right, I hand the win to Ben Quick.
Good job.
Okay, next up, the next debate is between AJ O'Connell and Jenna Berkowitz. AJ, do you want to go first or second?
I'll go second.
Okay, your question is from Zach Jones. He asks, which would you rather have happen to you every day? You drop a tray of dishes or you step in a big puddle?
Well, I'm going to say I would rather drop a tray of dishes. Because while that's embarrassing, everyone's just going to kind of feel bad for you. And if you're stepping in a puddle, everyone feels bad for you, but then you're fucking wet. And, like, that's gross. Like, the worst is, like, when you're stepping through puddles while you're walking in the rain and then, like, the back of your pants gets wet and it's all, like, splashing up and all that. You just don't want that. You want to have the tray of dishes. And, like, you might be really bad at your job, but, like, everyone else there is going to feel really bad for you. So, yes, that.
If you step in a puddle, you're a little wet, but if you drop dishes every day, you're losing your job on, like, day three. They're not that going to be that nice about it. You're going to lose your job, and then you're going to continue breaking your own dishes, presumably. That's going to be expensive, but too bad because you don't have a job. I don't even know how you're getting these dishes at a certain point. You're living in the zoo because... That was a great idea, and we're going to do that. And I don't know, stealing dishes just to break them because you want dishes so bad. It's a real weird predicament. I don't even know. Strange how there are puddles every day, too, but, you know, I guess it's the same day. Yeah, you're gonna lose your job, and you're going to die.
So there's this stuff called, I think it's called melamine. It's like those dishes that don't break. So, like, that's what I would have in my house. Like, at the job, whatever, fuck that, I'm going to get fired. But you have these, like, unbreakable dishes at home. Once you drop dishes 3 days in a row when you don't have a job, you spend the rest of your savings on those melamine dishes, then you got dishes to eat off of. You might not have any food, but you'll have dishes. And I think it'll still be fine. If you keep dropping them, it's fine. And, like, I just want my pants to be dry.
Well, you're breaking the dishes, right? That's the thing. Or are you just dropping?
Says you're dropping a tray of dishes every day.
Oh, then that was a good point. But you still lost your job because you didn't figure this out. And also, it's so... That's like... You know when you're like... You drop a plastic cup, like a hard plastic cup in like a cafeteria, and then it just goes like... Duh, 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 and everybody's looking at you, and you're like, I'm so sorry.
Time.
That's you every day.
All right, I hand the win to AJ O'Connell. All right. The next debate will be between Chloe Kuna and Jacob Noble. Chloe, do you want to go first or second?
I'm going to go second.
Okay. All right, your question is from Chris Gagne. He asks, what's a more believable conspiracy theory? That the bartender serving Phil and Rita is God and knows about the time loop, or that Ned Ryerson is the devil and Phil signs his soul away when he buys life insurance at the end of the movie?
Well, the more believable one has to be Ned, right? Ned being the devil? Because there is no God. We all know that, at least. And I don't know any Neds, which just further proves that he probably is the devil. I've never met a Ned in my entire life. The only person I know Ned is Ned Flanders, and he's the opposite. That's his hidden secret. He is the devil. Ned Flanders and this guy Ned is the devil. And he's buying life insurance. I mean, I've seen the movie probably every day for the past 2 years, so I know it back and front. But he's buying life insurance, am I correct?
Yeah, all kinds of insurance from Ned Ryerson. Okay. Full-term life.
Full-time? Full-term.
Yeah.
And then he dies. He's the devil.
I think it's pretty obvious that the bartender is God, right? Just because you don't want to believe that a black person can be God, okay? Just saying. Very obviously. Yeah, the one person of color in this entire town is obviously God. Why else would he be there? You know? If I were him, I would just get the fuck out of there. Ned's just an annoying person. That's all. There are a lot of annoying people in the world. And especially in this town, if you're watching the movie. Yeah, only that one black bartender. Must be very lonely. He's God. There you go. I'm done.
Haven't seen the movie every day for the past few years. I've never seen anybody of color. I mean, I just see people as people in the movie. I don't differentiate people as black, white. So I didn't even know the bartender was black. I didn't even cross my mind for one iota of that movie. Now, if I'm going to go call everyone who gets me drunk God, then I'm going to have no faith left.
I mean, I think that's more of a reason to have faith if you ask me. As somebody who was a bartender, definitely have seen a lot of people have, you know, like their lives, like all of their decisions happening on their faces at once. It's a very powerful position to be able to cut somebody off. Yeah, that's the closest to God I've ever felt. It's great.
All right. Tough call. I got a hand. The win to Chloe Kuna. All right. The next debate is between Katie Baker and Pete Andrews. Okay. Katie, do you want to go first or second?
I'll go first.
Okay. Your question is from Kyle Mangan. He asks, which is more creepy, a balding man reciting your favorite French poem to you, or a guy you barely know carving an ice sculpture of your face from memory?
I would say the guy I barely know carving my face in ice from memory would be creepier, because we have to put a stop to the bald shaming in this country. And it's known that it's a little too easy to hate on the French, I myself have sculpted and know that to make a form of someone else's face is creepy, because you're kind of like recreating their essence, and that's gross.
It is far creepier to have a bald man recite your favorite French poem to you, because how would he know that it was Farajaka? That's a level of intimacy far deeper than knowing my face from memory. Bill put his face on a hat.
Technically, I had nothing to do with it.
See? Someone just was able to put his face on things, you know? You know, besides the little kickback you should get for the monetary sales of that ice capade, you know, that's just someone being polite, really. If you have a skill, you got to practice it. But French poetry, you learned a second language. And then you told it to me. That's a waste of time. I did not understand it. I don't know French. At all. Really.
Time!
Can I just ask, whose favorite French poem isn't Farajaka? That is hardly fair to take a stab, because really, are you sleeping? It's a question we gotta ask ourselves, and if someone else wants to ask me, I say that's fine.
You know how easy it is to carve my face in ice? It's basically just an ice snowman. It's pretty round, it's almost translucent, and there isn't a lot of character in it. A French poem? That's layers of some bullshit language that they just yell as you're running away anyways. Ice sculpting's cool. Sculpturing. Carving?
Time! All right. Excellent. Excellent debate. I have to hand the win to Katie Baker. Okay. Next up, it will be Sarah Morgan and Jeremiah Broderick. Okay, your question is from Brandon Valley. He asks, commit every evil crime until you become a monster, or attempt to make the townsfolk see you as a god.
Is this just a superpower universe or just me doing this?
I mean, it's just you being stuck in the same day over and over again.
Oh, okay. We're assuming that. I make them think I'm a god because then I can be as evil as possible. If I just do evil stuff, it's not going to work out for me. Like, if I push somebody, they're going to get mad and then I'm going to have to wake up the next day and start over again. If I convince them I'm a god early, I can do a lot of shit. Like god shit. Like, they can build stuff for me, and then I can watch it crumble by the end of the day. If I just do an evil thing, I gotta spend like 2 hours in jail before I wake up again.
I think that doing tons of crime sounds like way more fun, because it's basically like no consequences, and you're going to learn how to escape getting arrested because you get to practice it over and over and get just, like, better and better. And, like, I'm just going to go around, like, kicking puppies and pushing little kids in the gutter and just, like, stepping on people and stealing shit, lighting stuff on fire. It's just going to be, like, a free-for-all, and it's going to be great. I'm taking you all with me.
I will also be doing many of those things, but with my hordes of followers. And without, if I kick a, I can only kick one puppy in the gutter if I'm just alone. But if I have a system in place with people behind me and no one trying to stop me, I can kick so many puppies. Just math-wise, I'm right on this one.
I don't want to, like, discredit your argument there, but have you heard of our president and his many followers? Like, he has enthusiastic followers, and I'm pretty sure they kick puppies. So I think I would have a ton of followers on my evil crime spree. And people would know what they're signing up for. So I'm not like pulling any punches. I'm just like, join me, people. Let's do some shit. Let's fuck shit up.
Time. All right. I hand the win to Sarah Morgan. The next debate is between Ted Pettingell and Chloe Kuna. Okay. Your question is from Sean Clark. He asks, better prank to pull if you know it will be deleted, punching a man in the face or promising to buy all of his goods?
Oh, I mean, it's got to be punching him in the face, right? I mean, that's more of a crime and less of a prank, but I don't know that... I don't know that buying his goods is a prank either. Like, that's just helping him out. I mean, I've never punched anybody in the face, and I have tiny little French wrists, only good for reciting poetry and writing poetry. So it would definitely be a prank coming from me, because you'd be like, did a fly just swat me? I don't know. What was that? Yeah, that would be fun. I just want to punch someone in the face right now. Who's ready? No, I can't. It would damage my rings. I can't punch Ted. But I would love to punch Ned. That would be great. Yeah, sounds fun.
So, yeah, I, like, like Chloe said, punching somebody isn't a prank. It's just assault. Although promising a small business person you'll buy all their goods and thus save their business. Hilarious prank. Nothing like sticking it to small businessmen. What are you trying to do? Compete in the modern economy of 1992? You don't even know what's coming. Walmart, Amazon. Good luck if I buy all your goods today and keep you afloat for a couple of years. Because fucking mega corporations are coming to fuck you in the mouth. With a big old dick of capitalism. I know generally we favor the proletariat on this show, but
time.
Yes. Well, I much prefer as a poet the metaphor of actually physically harming somebody. It's just, you know, a lot more immediately satisfying. And if we think about it, given the premise is that, you know, the day keeps repeating, you never get to see the prank fulfilled. You never get to see the, like, hurt and the tears as this man realized you just lied to him about buying all your shit.
Time!
That's the beauty of a prank. You don't need to see their face. You just know. You know that someday you're going to snap out of this time loop and know this guy is going to be poor as fuck. Unlike our typical French poet over here, so quick to violence. That's what they say about the French and their poets. Big time fighters.
Time. All right, I gotta hand the win to Chloe Kuna. All right. Next debate is between Sean Rosa and Sarah Morgan. Your question is from Kim Margolis. She asks, if you're at a benefit and they're raffling off these two, who do you bid on? Chris Elliott or Punxsutawney Phil?
That's the groundhog?
Yes. Okay.
I think that groundhog is really cute, so I'm definitely going to bid on him. I had a teacher in high school that had a groundhog as a pet, and he would bring it into class dressed as a Civil War soldier, because I grew up in Tennessee. And that groundhog would pee out of this cage during history class and was awesome. It was so cool. And I think he said at home he let it, like, run around. And I'm pretty sure that's an illegal pet. But if they're auctioning him off at a raffle, then I'm assuming I get to keep him. I'm not going to, like, go on a date with him. Right? You didn't really specify that, actually, now. But I don't want to keep Chris Elliott either, so. Just going for the groundhog.
I want to keep Chris Elliott.
Yeah.
Wonderful man. I feel like... I mean, if you keep that groundhog, you have to keep a groundhog. Like, I think if you keep a groundhog and you, like, have it as a pet, like, I think it's just winter forever for you. You know, you're just stuck in this one. If you own a groundhog, every day is Groundhog's Day. Bill, every day is Groundhog's Day. Well, every other day is Groundhog's Day. Are you a weekend groundhog dad?
What?
Gold cat.
Groundhog. Gold cat.
It's your time. I don't get it.
It is my time,
Bill. I hope that when I win this groundhog, Phil, in this raffle, that every day is Groundhog Day, because I think that sounds wonderful. We're going to go on so many groundhog adventures. We're going to go to the dog park and confuse people. I'm going to walk him down the street. He's going to bite ankles and join my evil-filled rampage from the earlier debate, and it's going to be wonderful. At night, he's going to sleep on my bed beside me and protect my house when I'm not there, and it's going to be beautiful.
Time. I mean, I'm pretty sure I can do all of that with Chris Elliott as well. Like, I mean, if I show up at a dog park with Chris Elliott on a leash, nobody's going to notice that you have a groundhog.
All right. Well, this is excellent. I think I have to hand the win to Sarah Morgan. Yes.
Why are you doing the wrestling heel thing?
Well, Bill, because we don't allow teamwork on this show, so...
They don't want us together, Bill.
Next up is Bill McMorrow... and Chloe Kuna. Yeah.
Thank you, everybody. Nice to see y'all.
Chloe, your question is from Scott McLaughlin. Scott asks, is it a good idea for Ned Ryerson to introduce himself to old acquaintances as the guy who did the whistling belly button trick at the high school talent show? Yes or no?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, what's the problem with that? Have you ever met anybody who whistles with their belly button? That's amazing. In Paris, we have many beautiful and wonderful arts, but never so majestic as that. I would tell everybody about that. Yeah, I mean, all I can whistle from is my mouth and occasionally my anus, but... The belly button? That's magical. I would that's memorable too. Like that's if you want to reintroduce yourself, you got to go with the most memorable thing. And like he's not really memorable in any other way. He's a very sad man. But the belly button, amazing. Yeah.
Did you know that your belly button is where your mommy used to feed you when you were just a little baby? When you were stuck up inside of her? I don't think that's... Listen, I'm not a doctor, so I'm going to use layman's terms. But, you know, when the baby's wedged, like, right... You know what I'm saying in the area. And it's not the stomach, but it's... I fucking lost... I lost where I was going with that. What was the question?
Is that a good way to introduce yourself to old acquaintances?
No, because it's like saying, oh, it's, you know, it's my mother's, hey, take a look at my mother's, you know, because it's, see, what I'm saying is it's because it's the umbilical cord. So it attaches and it goes inside the hoo-ha into the, man, I wish I had studied more. But, you know, so if when you, with, oh, when you do that with your thing, it's like, hey, look at my...
Time!
So, no, yeah, I know that Americans don't have very good sex education. French people have fantastic sex education. It's the uterus. That's what the... I didn't have anything to add. I just want to be sure that we all know. I one time had to draw a diagram of the clitoris to a woman who had no idea where it was. And it was very depressing for me.
Jam!
Not for nothing. Uterus, fifth planet from the sun, I believe. So I know your French education might be muy terrifico, I believe. I'm using that correctly, right? I don't know past tense, present tense. I might be, because I'm rough. Listen, the baby comes out of the thing. I don't want to be vulgar because maybe a little kids listen to this podcast. Maybe it's an all ages thing.
Time. All right, I got to hand the win to Bill McMorrow. Bill bought the most merchandise before the show.
Dude. And now, I saw the writing on the wall.
And now he is in the finals here.
He does this professionally. You throw money at him.
So, Sean, your question is, you are playing Bill Murray, you're in the Groundhog's
Phil
Day.
Phil Connors.
Phil Connors, thank you. You may only save the kid, or you may save the mayor. Who do you save, and why?
I would save the kid. Because the kid has a whole life of potential ahead of him. The mayor's already had a pretty good life. He's mayor of Rat Town. That's what we call the groundhog in Quincy. So. Oh, yeah. He's the mayor of Punxsutawney already. He's had a good life. This kid maybe could grow up to be another mayor that changes the way that we tell weather. Like, I don't know. Maybe instead of using a rodent, we could use, like, satellites and shit. And this mayor could do that. He could bring about a new age of technology and enlightenment. And do you agree with me, Bill?
No.
Okay.
Go ahead. You saved the fucking mayor. He's the fucking head of your whole system of government. You let the fucking mayor falls, it's fucking chaos. You got the fucking the lady over in, what's that? The one they handle, like, the parking? You know, they hand, like, they're not DPW, but they act like they're fucking DPW. You know the fucking, you guys know the people. They fucking drive around in the cars, and they fucking look at people. And they're like, oh, fucking official business. Little kid fucking, there's a good chance he could become a piece of shit. I mean, there's a good chance he's going to become a piece of shit. I don't want to bring up opiates because I don't think I need to, but there's a good chance this kid's going to, first of all, get hooked on opiates, probably from some sports injury at school, because that's how they get them. You hurt yourself when you're young, and they're like, oh, just get a little boost, get you back out there on the field. And then next thing, they're fucking dealing in the middle schools. That went off
Time!
I think stigmatizing opiate abuse and addiction is something that the current mayor would do. He's a bad guy. When Phil Connors is about to drive into them, he's like, shoot high, don't hit the groundhog. He's more concerned with the groundhog than he is with our people who are addicted to drugs at no fault of their own.
Time!
That groundhog pays for fucking everything in this shitty fucking town, dude. Of course you protect the fucking groundhog. And just as a side note, I want to say, I came off very anti-drug dealer the last time. I'm all for them. I think drug dealers do a very valuable service in this crazy world that we live in. Hey, we all want to get fucked up. Let's be adults about it. But seriously, kill that little kid because he's probably going to be a piece of shit. I've met his parents. Have you even met his parents before? Fucking gigantic
time.
Bag of shit.
All right. I expected this to be a little bit tougher a debate, but it's clearly Bill McMorrow is winning here.
All right, I'd like my money back for all this shit. No refunds. All right. So congratulations, Bill McMorrow is our champion tonight.
Guys, I don't want to do a speech. Thank you.
All right.
Talk about your shirt.
Yeah.
So that's our Groundhog Day debate. Thank you.
Guys, it's a poly cotton blend, I believe. I'm hoping if this shrinks in the wash, you said I could return it at any time up to what's 5 years?
Yeah. Hey, if you're listening to this, order a shirt. Okay. Yeah, the merch link will be on the
comments.
The merch link will be in the comments. Okay, so next week, or Friday, actually, May 4th, we're at Maggie's Lounge, and we are debating something that I said we would never do again, because last time it went so far off the rails. We will be debating wrestling, like the WWE, and even more specifically, wrestling heels. So we're talking about the bad guys here. Unfortunately, Sean Rosa and Bill McMorrow are banned from the show for previous misgivings. So they will not be there. They will not be showing up.
Yeah, there's no way that I can get
there's
into
not
going to
be so, yeah. any appearances from them at all.
He's going to have the Four River Bridge up. So apparently.
Yeah, we're raising the bridge between Weymouth and Quincy so Bill can't get in.
Sorry, guys.
So come down May 4th to Maggie's Lounge to see the wrestling debate. And you won't see Sean or Bill, but we'll be there. All right. Thanks for listening. Good night.
was Pick a Side, Stupid. If you liked what you heard, please rate, review, and subscribe to the show.
All right, and that is our show for this week. Thank you all for listening. Thanks to Caitlin Durante for being our special guest this week. Congrats to Bill McMorrow on his win. Thanks to Mike Grimaldi for the artwork this week. You can check him out at Grimdrops on Instagram and Facebook. And you can follow us, Pick a Side Stupid, on Instagram. You can join our group on Facebook. You can contribute questions each week if you want. Our next debate is about wrestling heels, so if you're a big wrestling fan, maybe hop in the group, ask some questions. That show will be May 4th at Maggie's Lounge in Quincy, 7 p.m. And we are at Maggie's Lounge the first, second, and third Friday of every month at 7 p.m. So come join us sometime.